Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh.
This year marks the centennial of the Pulitzer Prize. In celebration, the South Dakota Humanities Council has partnered with various organizations to bring Pulitzer Prize winners to the state throughout the year. They've all generously stopped by Dakota Midday. Today, we bring you a conversation with composer John Luther Adams. He says music is how he understands the world. It redeems his failings as a human being. I met John Luther Adams at the University of Sioux Falls, where we talked about sound, about the natural world, and about the mysterious tides of existence.
Most of what comes to us is counterfeit experience. It's secondhand experience. Everything's mediated and interpreted, and we're told before the fact what we're going to hear. And then while it's happening, we've got the running commentary, and then we've got the instant replay, and then we've got the post-game analysis or the political pundits telling us, you know, who won and what it meant. Everything is mediated and interpreted, and to my way of thinking, counterfeit, secondhand experience. And what I long for as a thinking human being is authentic experience. And I think art, music in particular, can give us that. At this point, I've been doing this my whole life. This is music is not what I do. It's how I understand the world. It's the thing that gives my life meaning and redeems my failings as a human being. So I no longer measure my work against anything else or any other work of art. I mean, maybe in the back of my mind, I might still be measuring my work against the mountains of the Central Alaska Range, and sadly, it doesn't measure up. But Richard Serra, the great sculptor, says that a mature artist reaches a point at which you're working from out of the work itself, and I feel as though I'm there now in my life and work. So all I'm really doing is listening for what I call the ring of truth. You know, does this resonate? Does this feel like something real? Does this provoke some kind of authentic experience? And that's the test for me.
How did you learn how to listen? You listen differently than other people listen.
I guess. Yeah. I must have learned to listen the way we learn anything, through practice, through repetition, through doing it. And for whatever reason, music and listening has been my path. Since I was a kid at 12 and formed my first garage band, I think what kept me going and still keeps me going all these years later is my desire to hear something that I haven't heard before. That's what I love more than anything else.
When was the last time you heard something that you hadn't heard before?
When I heard a new reading, a reading session of my new string quartet last week, and I wasn't sure what I was hearing, and that made me very happy.
What is it like to hear an orchestra play something that you've composed for the first time? The first time you've experienced it, what is that like for you as an artist?
It varies from piece to piece, from orchestra to orchestra. Sometimes, as with Become Ocean, I actually get it right from the get-go, and it sounds exactly the way I imagined it would. Other times, I'll hear it and I think, oh no, that's not it at all. And I've worked on pieces for decades. It just varies from piece to piece. But when you hear it, you know it.
Become Ocean came to you
fairly quickly, but yet took a lifetime to create, but yet came out in maybe a 4-month period, I think I heard you say.
Talk
a little bit about how that's different from the work you did, and what was that experience to have it sort of come to you or come through you? What was it like to create that piece and get it on paper?
Yeah, I've experienced this before, but never with a work of this scale. I composed Become Ocean in the space of 4 months. It's a 42-minute piece for a very large orchestra. And it just seemed to write itself. But it wrote itself after 40-some-odd years of a preparation. It was immediately preceded by a 12-minute piece, also for a large orchestra, called Dark Waves. And I spent an entire year working on that 12-minute piece. So I think it must have prepared Become Ocean in ways that I wasn't really aware of.
Do you attach that to any sort of divine inspiration or something outside of yourself, or is that more generated from the experience and you were just ready to say it and so you did?
I think when when I'm deep in the work, I lose myself in the work. When I'm in the zone, my wife says, we've been together for 40 years now, and she just knows, okay, this is going to be a couple of months and there's not going to be a lot of conversation. And that's what I've learned. That's necessary, that's required to allow the work to come through me. It's also what I want for myself, and it's what I want for you, the listener, ultimately in hearing the music. I want to get lost in it. And I want to invite you to have the opportunity to get lost in this strange, beautiful, sometimes frightening new world, and find your own way through it.
Do you think artists need to give themselves permission to sort of get lost in their own work? Who gave you permission to spend months without talking to someone?
And
really giving yourself to it fully?
Well, you know, for me, it's not about, for some artists, I think they're trying to say something or express themselves. And for me, art is not a matter of self-expression. It's about being in touch with something bigger than I am, something deeper, more mysterious than I can fathom. It's, in that sense, it's a kind of spiritual discipline. And I don't know if anyone or anything gave me permission to do that, but no one told me that I couldn't. And I was blessed to have key people in my life along the way who implicitly and explicitly believed in me. And that made me feel that not only could I, but I had a responsibility to do this with my life.
You're going to work with the younger musicians this weekend in Sioux Falls, as well as mm-hmm. the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra.
Right.
When you work with the students, do you feel a sense of responsibility? Are you trying to get them to understand something? Mm-hmm. Or are you just working with them to help them understand the piece? Is it bigger for you to work with the kids in some ways?
Yeah, it is bigger to work with kids, and it's easier too, because my attitude toward working with kids or with young people is just an attitude of being open to what they have to teach me. because young people understand things that we've forgotten and things that we need to remember. And yeah, I know what I know, and I know maybe a lot of things that younger people don't know, and that will inevitably come out if it seems pertinent or useful to them. But I love going into work with young people with that attitude of just being open to whatever they might hear, whatever they might understand that I didn't get.
You said that winning the Pulitzer in your 60s was an advantage for you as an artist. Tell me about that.
Well, it at least when it, I'm glad that the Pulitzer happened at 61 and not at 41. I'm not sure if that was an advantage, but it was not the disadvantage that it might have been winning it when I was younger, because at this point in my life, there's no turning back. There's no question about what my life's work is, who I am as an artist. There's no possibility of recognition changing my work. It's changed my life in good ways and in not so great ways. It's required me to be more present in the world than by nature I might want to be. That's a responsibility that I take very seriously now. But in terms of the work itself, nothing has changed. I'm doing what I've always done, and just doing my best to follow wherever the music wants to lead me next.
Do you consider yourself an outlier?
I spent most of my life living in a cabin in Alaska. My adolescent hero was Henry David Thoreau. I'm kind of a misanthrope and an outsider, at least so I've always thought, and here I am now, you know, Mr. Pulitzer Prize winning composer, kind of an ultimate insider, and I don't quite know what to make of that. So I just try to keep a sense of humor about it all.
Who's your hero today?
You know, it's funny. I still have, I'm 60, whatever I am. I'm going to be 64 soon, and most of my mentors, role models, heroes in music and literature and visual arts have gone. You know, their work endures, and I still revere their work. But I'm losing elders now. I'm becoming an elder, and I've got a few heroes, I suppose. It's not a word I use often. I think it's an overused word in our culture. But I admire of older visual artists. You know, I admire James Turrell and Richard Serra, and I especially admire Robert Irwin, who is now in his late 80s, and I've had the good fortune to meet on a couple of occasions. So there are still people. My good friend Barry Lopez, the writer, Barry's eight or nine years older than I am. He's kind of like an older brother to me. I still have those people, but I also think, in a way, if we're looking for heroes, we're barking up the wrong tree. That nobody's really going to save us. We're ultimately responsible for our own individual and collective lives, and we're accountable for what we do and we don't do. And
In that vein, do you want to talk about ecology or the environment, or does your work speak for itself in that sense? Are there words that you still want to put toward how we should consider that topic in our society today, or is most of your communication
I'm happy to talk about the relationship between my music and my broader concerns as a citizen of the earth. When I was younger, I was in my 20s and my 30s, I was a full-time environmental activist. And that still informs everything I do as an older artist now. But I, at the same time, I believe in the intrinsic value and power of art as art. And so I like to imagine that I can have it both ways, that I can make music that stands on its own, that is a self-contained world, and offers at least the invitation, the possibility of an authentic experience for you, the listener. And at the same time, I hope that the music, self-contained though it may be, is also inextricably tied to the larger world that I inhabit and that we all share, this beautiful, miraculous world that is this planet that's the only home we're ever going to know.
What was it like to win the Pulitzer Prize? How did you find out, and how did that day unfold for you?
I was in Houghton, Michigan, on the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, doing a residency at Michigan Tech. And they were working me pretty hard. And I had an hour and a half break, and I was exhausted. And I went back to the hotel. It was early April. It was snowing sideways, and I lay down for a nap, and I forgot to turn off my cell phone. Just drifted into REM state, and the phone rang. Yeah. And I picked it up, and it was my friend Frank O'Terry, composer, critic, musical scholar, writer, editor. And he said, John, I've got some news for you. And he told me, you've just been awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Become Ocean. And I said, okay. Frank, can I call you back? So I called him back because he made me promise. He said, yes, you can, but you have to promise you're not going to talk to anyone else before me. I get the first quote. Uh-huh. So, you know, talk about your wake-up call. It was really an inconvenient interruption. But that evening, it was very sweet. I had a public presentation. I was given a talk at Michigan Tech. And the whole town of Houghton, Michigan showed up. I mean, there was standing room only. It was as though the whole town had been awarded the Pulitzer Prize. Aww. I loved it. Aww. It was so sweet.
John Luther Adams is the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer of Become Ocean, as well as other award-winning works. The South Dakota Symphony Orchestra presented Become Ocean when John Luther Adams visited South Dakota. We were originally planning on layering an excerpt of that performance with the conversation you just heard, but it seemed wrong somehow in the end. It seemed like the antithesis of what the composer would have wanted, of how he would expect us to listen. So instead, we're offering you this unfiltered excerpt from Become Ocean, performed by the South Dakota Symphony Orchestra.